Good afternoon. Welcome to your coronavirus update. It is Thursday, January 7th, 2021. We are reporting from the Recording Library of West Texas, and I'm Michael. The last 24 hours have been a breathtaking time, as much as the last several months have been a breathtaking time for all of us. I'm going forward with the COVID update today. I should note that because many reporters have been diverted to covering what happened at the Capitol yesterday, especially those from the Washington Post, some of my usual sources for COVID-19 reports that are trustworthy and frequently updated had no updates today. However, we still have many articles today regarding coronavirus. In fact, even though COVID-19 was overshadowed the past 24 hours, the virus continued to ravage the country with a vengeance, and we'll report on that today, just as we have been for the past many months. In fact, there are several very newsworthy stories regarding the coronavirus and treatments. Here's some of the articles that we'll be reading today. Patients in intensive care in the UK to receive arthritis drugs as trial shows reduction in mortality. Study says plasma infusions administered early can help keep older patients from many severe effects. U.S. vaccine rollout needs time to catch up to distribution goals, Fauci says. A vaccine made by a Chinese company is said to be effective and could help fill a gap left by Western countries. And if we have time, I have two longer pieces. People without symptoms spread virus in more than half of the cases, CDC model finds. And trying not to waste a single drop of coronavirus vaccine. First, we'll take a look at the numbers from the Odessa American. Editor's note, Ector County last updated COVID-19 numbers Tuesday, December 29th. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 11,543. Ector County negative, 37,671 out of 49,695 tested, with 481 pending, 181 deaths. Recovered, 9,711. Active, 1,651. ECISD daily cases, 2 students, 3 staff. From the Midland Reporter Telegram, again, they usually put their numbers within a story, so I'll be reading these numbers, taking bits and pieces out of the article. The number of total COVID cases during the pandemic surpassed 14,000 in Midland County. The Midland Health Department reported that another 138 cases were reported Tuesday. That increased the total of unconfirmed cases to 425 this week, and the total number of confirmed and unconfirmed cases during the pandemic to 14,022. Along the latest case milestone having been reached, the city of Midland also reported another 2 deaths Wednesday. That brings the total announced to 7 this week and 192 during the pandemic. Other notables from Wednesday included the percentage of COVID-19 patients compared to total patients at Midland Memorial Hospital dropped to 27%, while percentage of COVID patients at hospitals across the Midland region rose to 12.61%. Although the percentage across the region is below 15%, it has increased for 5 straight days. The percentage of COVID rooms filled with patients fell to 82%, which was below the 7-day average of 86%. Midland Health reported 92% of the hospital's 295 total rooms, COVID and otherwise, were occupied, which was well above the 7-day average, 82%. The percentage of those people testing positive at Midland Health testing centers this week increased to 31.3%. Also, the number of positive tests climbed to 208. The total this week is exactly half of the 416 positive cases reported last week. Should the percentage this week remain at or above 31%, it would set a record for positivity during the pandemic. From the Texas Tribune, the same headline as yesterday. 1 in 5 hospital beds in Texas are now occupied by COVID-19 patients. Average new cases in Texas increased by 4,251 cases compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 6th, 19,535 new confirmed cases and 4,095 new probable cases were reported. Hospitalizations in Texas increased by 1,636 patients compared with a week ago. As of January 6th, 13,628 Texans are hospitalized for the coronavirus. Average new deaths in Texas increased by 38 deaths compared with the 7-day average a week ago. On January 6th, 326 new deaths were reported. I also want to note, before we get into our coronavirus briefs, that one of the front page stories on the Odessa American is about the COVID vaccine in Odessa, and it mentions that the Sunflower Pharmacy is now offering the COVID-19 vaccine. It is a privately owned pharmacy, and they received an initial 100 doses of the Moderna vaccine on Tuesday morning and began vaccinating customers by 1 p.m. By 6 p.m., they had vaccinated 45 people. The Sunflower Pharmacy is at 700 North Grant Avenue. Number 150 is the only independently owned pharmacy in Ector County that has received state approval to administer the vaccine. Interested residents can call or visit the pharmacy. The phone number is 432-606-2394 to sign up and be placed on next week's vaccination schedule. The pharmacy is open 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday. Also, a reminder that several large chain pharmacies, including CVS, Walgreens, and Albertsons, have also been approved, according to the Texas DSHS. Now to coronavirus briefs. U.S. reports more than 253,000 new COVID-19 cases. As of the end of the day Wednesday, there have been at least 21,299,340 cases of coronavirus in the U.S. and at least 361,123 people who contracted the virus have died. The United States reported 132,476 current COVID-19 hospitalizations on Wednesday, setting a new record high since the pandemic began, according to the COVID Tracking Project. This is the 36th consecutive day the U.S. has remained above 100,000 current hospitalizations. The CDC warned the U.S. COVID-19 death toll could exceed 430,000 by January 30th, as the country reported another single-day record of fatalities and hospitalizations. The U.S. CDC has found more than 50 U.S. cases of the coronavirus variant first identified in the U.K. The U.S. coronavirus vaccine rollout has been slow, and some states eager to move more doses are beginning to vaccinate more than the healthcare workers and nursing home residents initially at the front of the line. Just 5.3 million of the 17.3 million doses distributed have been administered in the United States, only 30.7%. That doesn't come close to the target the Trump administration set in the fall to administer 20 million doses to Americans by the end of 2020. Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the U.S. National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said that China's delayed reporting on person-to-person and asymptomatic transmission of COVID-19 hindered the world's early response to the virus. An open letter from U.S. physicians calls on the Biden administration to mail masks to all American homes. The mayor of London has warned that the city could soon run out of hospital beds as cases continue to surge in Britain. Japan declared a state of emergency for Tokyo and three neighboring prefectures after the country reported a record rise in COVID-19 cases. The World Health Organization has called for intensified COVID-19 measures to fight the new UK variant in Europe. Now we'll move to some shorter articles. Overshadowed by events in Washington, the virus was deadlier than ever. By Eric Nagorny, Campbell Robertson, and Mitch Smith from the New York Times. As Americans were transfixed by the spectacle of the Capitol under siege, the coronavirus continued to sweep across the United States. Officials reported at least 3,963 new coronavirus deaths in the United States on Wednesday, a new single-day record, though delayed recording because of the holidays might have played a role. The daily death toll in New Hampshire, Oklahoma, and Pennsylvania also set records. Some states also reported single-day case records, while Illinois became one of five states that have now recorded their millionth case since the pandemic began. As the unexpectedly slow vaccine drive began to pick up pace, the federal government moved to start a program to inoculate members of high-risk groups at pharmacies, among them older people and frontline workers. Some health officials urged flexibility in distributing the vaccines. Dr. Jerome Adams, the Surgeon General, said states need not adhere too rigidly to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention guidelines about whom to vaccinate first. If fewer health care workers agree to be vaccinated, he said, states should move quickly to other priority groups. But even as the work continued to get more shots in arms, health officials were racing against a fast-moving variant of the coronavirus that has the potential to change the disease-fighting landscape in the United States, as it has in Britain. And with no good system in place to identify genetic variations of the virus, experts warn the government will be hard-pressed to track the variant, leaving health officials in the dark. Patients in intensive care in the UK to receive arthritis drugs as trial shows reduction in mortality. From CNN's Lauren Kent and Sarah Dean in London. Patients in intensive care units in the United Kingdom could soon receive drugs typically used to treat rheumatoid arthritis after clinical trials found they can help save lives and reduce time in hospital by 10 days, the Department of Health said Thursday. Results from the government-funded clinical trial, published online on Thursday but not yet peer-reviewed, showed the drugs tocilizumab and sarilumab reduced the relative risk of death by 24% when either were administered to patients within 24 hours of entering intensive care, the Department of Health said in a press release. They also reduced time in the hospital by an average of 7 to 10 days. This is a significant step forward for increasing survival of patients in intensive care with COVID-19. The data shows that tocilizumab and likely sarilumab speed up and improve the odds of recovery in intensive care, which is crucial for helping to relieve pressure on intensive care and hospitals and saving lives, England's Deputy Chief Medical Officer Jonathan Van Tam said. The government will update its guidance on Friday to encourage the use of these drugs for COVID-19 patients in intensive care. The drugs are typically available in UK hospitals. During the trial, the drugs were administered in addition to a corticosteroid such as dexamethasone, which is already provided in the standard of care, the press release said. Patients receiving the current standard of care alone experienced a mortality rate of 35.8%. This was reduced to 27.3% using tocilizumab or sarilumab, a 24% relative reduction in risk of mortality. Study shows plasma infusions administered early can keep older patients from many severe effects. By Catherine J. Wu, New York Times. Blood plasma from recovered COVID-19 patients can help older adults avoid getting seriously sick with the coronavirus if the therapy is administered within days of the onset of the illness, a small but rigorous clinical trial in Argentina found. The results published Wednesday in the New England Journal of Medicine are some of the first to conclusively point toward the oft-discussed treatment's beneficial effects. They arrived nearly 5 months after the Food and Drug Administration, under pressure from President Trump, gave the therapy an emergency green light for use in people hospitalized with COVID-19. Thousands of patients have received infusions of plasma in the months since, while researchers waited for the data. The new study is one of the first well-designed clinical trials to show that the therapy has some benefit. That's kind of what we have been looking for in terms of really having evidence, said Dr. Boguma Kabasan Tetkani, an infectious disease physician at Emory University who was not involved in the research. Convalescent plasma, the pale yellow liquid left over after blood is stripped of its red and white cells, teems with disease-fighting molecules called antibodies. The new study, led by Dr. Fernando Podak, a pediatric infectious disease specialist and the scientific director of the Infant Foundation in Argentina, appears to clarify the circumstances under which plasma performs best. In 80 people, an infusion of plasma decreased the risk of developing a severe case of COVID by 48%, compared with another group of 80 who received a saline solution instead, the study found. The study's parameters were strict. Everyone enrolled in the trial was at least 65 years old, a group known to be at higher risk of falling seriously ill. About half of the participants also had health conditions, which made them more vulnerable to the virus. And the plasma therapy, which was screened to ensure it contained high levels of antibodies, was always given within 3 days of the patient's first symptoms. U.S. vaccine rollout needs time to catch up to distribution goals, Fauci says, from CNN's Naomi Thomas. The U.S. COVID-19 vaccine rollout needs a couple of weeks to catch up, and if that doesn't happen, it's time to make changes, Dr. Anthony Fauci, director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, said on Thursday. The rollout's been slow, with just 5.3 million doses administered of the 17.3 million doses distributed in the United States as of Wednesday. Speaking on NPR's Morning Edition on Thursday, Fauci noted that it's early in the distribution process and hiccups were always expected. That's not an excuse. We can't make excuses, he added, but I think that's something to be expected. The other unfortunate thing, he said, was that the rollout began during the holiday season, and that's the reason why things start slow, he added. I think it would be fair to just observe what happens in the next couple of weeks, he said. If we don't catch up on what the original goal was, then we really need to make some changes about what we're doing. We just need to give a little bit of slack. Not a lot, but enough to say, well, we're past the holiday season. Now let's really turn the afterburners on. The U.S. has the highest number of COVID-19 cases worldwide, with a total of 21.3 million cases reported, according to data from Johns Hopkins University. A vaccine made by a Chinese company is said to be effective and could help fill a gap left by Western countries, by Sui Li Wei, New York Times. Brazilian officials said Thursday that a coronavirus vaccine made by a Chinese company was effective, bolstering the chances of approval for a second Chinese inoculation that could be rolled out in much of the developing world. Officials in the state of Sao Paulo, where a prominent medical research institute carried out a large study of the vaccine made by the Beijing-based Sinovac, said the inoculation had an efficacy rate of 78%. The vaccine prevented all participants from developing serious and mild complications from the virus, officials said, calling it a highly effective preventative tool. In anticipation of approval, the vaccine called CoronaVac has already been shipped around the world as countries prepare for mass inoculation campaigns. Sinovac has sold more than 300 million doses, mostly to low- and middle-income countries, accounting for about half of the total doses that China says vaccine makers were capable of producing in 2020, based on an analysis of company statements and media reports. China is filling a void in poorer nations left by Western competitors. The United States is mainly focused on working through the chaos of distributing its vaccines at home. The European Union and other rich countries have bought many of the doses supplied by the American drug makers Pfizer and Moderna. And now we're going to read, if given time, a couple of longer articles. These are both from the Washington Post. People without symptoms spread virus in more than half of cases, CDC model finds. The finding underscores the importance of following guidelines to wear masks and maintain social distancing. By Ben Guarino, Washington Post. Published January 7th. People with no symptoms transmit more than half of all cases of the novel coronavirus, according to a new model developed by researchers at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Their findings reinforce the importance of following the agency's guidelines, regardless of whether you feel ill. Wear a mask, wash your hands, stay socially distant, and get a coronavirus test. That advice has been a constant refrain in a pandemic responsible for more than 350,000 deaths in the United States. 59% of all transmission came from people without symptoms under the model's baseline scenario. That includes 35% of new cases from people who infect others before they show symptoms, and 24% that come from people who never develop symptoms at all. The bottom line is controlling the COVID-19 pandemic really is going to require controlling the silent pandemic of transmission from persons without symptoms, said J. C. Butler, the CDC Deputy Director of Infectious Diseases and a co-author of the study. The community mitigation tools that we need to be utilized broadly to be able to slow the spread of SARS-CoV-2 from all infected persons, at least until we have those vaccines widely available. The emergence of a more contagious variant, first detected in the United Kingdom and since found in several U.S. states, throws the significance of those guidelines into even starker relief. Those findings are now in bold, italics, and underlined, Butler said. We've gone from 11-point font to 16-point font. The model, published Thursday in the journal JAMA Network Open, comports with earlier estimates of the contribution of asymptomatic spread. It's certainly confirmatory, but it's nice to see confirmation, said epidemiologist Richard Menzies, who directs the McGill International TB Center in Canada and was not affiliated with this research. These are pretty believable, solid results. Many factors influence how the coronavirus spreads. The researchers took an admittedly uncomplicated approach. Butler called it a fairly simple mathematical model and used that to assess several scenarios, varying the infectious period and proportion of transmission from people who never develop symptoms. The model consistently predicted that asymptomatic spread accounted for roughly half of viral transmission. I was a bit surprised how well it held up under a broad range of base assumptions, Butler said, such as shifting the timing of peak contagiousness from 4 days after infection to 5 or 6. But Muj Sevik, an infectious disease expert at Scotland's University of St. Andrews, argued some of the model's assumptions are flawed. Sevik said the best estimate for the relative contagiousness of people who do not have symptoms versus those who do was 35%, drawing from a review of the scientific literature published in September. The study authors instead estimated at baseline that people without symptoms were 75% as contagious. That figure, Butler said, came from their own literature analysis, including peer-reviewed and preprint research. I have no doubt that we'll still have people say, well, what if you did X, Y, or Z? But hopefully, being able to adjust the variables will help address some of these concerns, such as what we did, Butler said. Sevik also noted that the study does not account for the environment where the spread occurs. Maybe asymptomatic transmission is important, but it may be much more important in long-term care facilities and households, she said. That might mean that we need to do much more targeted testing for high-risk populations as opposed to mass screening. Whether vaccines stop coronavirus transmission is not yet certain and was not a scenario addressed in this model. The data on the impact of the vaccines on asymptomatic infection are very limited, Butler said, though he anticipates more information in the coming months. The clinical trials for the mRNA vaccines, authorized in December, concluded that the vaccinations are highly capable of preventing symptomatic illness, but those trials did not determine whether vaccinated people are able to spread the pathogen. If they were asymptomatic but equally contagious, then that's going to have quite an impact on the epidemic, Menzies warned. That is why it is so important to keep testing people, he said, especially those who were vaccinated and then exposed to the virus. And now here's our last article, also from the Washington Post. Trying Not to Waste a Single Drop of Coronavirus Vaccine by Lenny Bernstein and Lola Fadulu, published January 6th. Late in the afternoon on New Year's Day, David McMillan and a friend were food shopping in D.C. when the supermarket's pharmacist approached. She was closing in 10 minutes and had two doses of unused coronavirus vaccine. Were they interested? If not, she would have to discard the precious liquid. It was random. I wasn't expecting it. I wasn't going to be eligible for the vaccine for months, said McMillan, a 31-year-old law student and an employee at a law firm. I figured July. Within minutes, McMillan and his friend were inoculated, providing them a route out of the pandemic. McMillan plans to head back to the pharmacy January 29th for the second dose of a vaccine that studies show is better than 90% effective against the virus, which has killed more than 359,000 people in the United States, according to data compiled by the Washington Post. I feel like I've used up all my luck for the year on the first day, McMillan said, but that's one fewer person who can spread it to other people. No one expected a perfectly smooth rollout of the two new vaccines to hundreds of millions of people, an endeavor that has been hindered by delays in its first few weeks. But the campaign also is bringing good fortune to a few lucky souls, such as McMillan, who find themselves serendipitously in the path of unused doses of the vaccine. The two authorized doses, made by Moderna and Pfizer-BioNTech, must be used within 6 hours after being removed from sub-zero storage and reaching room temperature. Otherwise, they must be discarded. The Pfizer medication is diluted before use, another factor that affects its window of usefulness. Moderna's product comes in 10-dose vials, while Pfizer's vaccine is contained in 5-dose bottles. With a disease-weary nation awaiting deliverance, the workers distributing vaccines are trying not to waste a single drop. So when an overnight refrigeration failure in Ukiah, California, jeopardized 600 doses, officials there found themselves with 2 hours Monday to distribute the vaccine or lose those doses. The vaccine quickly went to jail guards, an elder care facility, firefighters, and others across Mendocino County. Within 90 minutes, Ukiah Fire Chief Doug Hutchinson said more than 100 people in the city were vaccinated, including Hutchinson and most of the fire department's 16 members. Though the firefighters are all paramedics, part of California's top tier of vaccine recipients, Hutchinson, 52, had expected to be immunized in late January. Fate moved him up about a month. Hutchinson said he feels some remorse over receiving the vaccine ahead of a few of his firefighters who were not available that day, but it's better that it got utilized and we can get it out to the community, he said in an interview Wednesday. At medical centers where frontline healthcare providers have been vaccinated since nurse Sandra Lindsay received the first shot December 14th, it's difficult to avoid having a few extra doses at the end of each day. Caregivers occasionally miss appointments, or a few doses are left over from vials of 5 and 10, officials said. With little guidance from the government, hospitals are working out their own policies. The Mayo Clinic system, headquartered in Rochester, Minnesota, offers extra doses first to workers in the emergency department and COVID-19 units, according to Melanie D. Swift, co-leader of the health system's vaccination plan. After that, vaccinators are offered a shot. Running out of unvaccinated arms, Mayo is now piloting a last-minute list where people who are scheduled for a vaccination at a future date can sign up if they are available to be vaccinated during the last hour of the vaccination clinic, Swift said in a statement. A spokeswoman said the system administers about 1 to 3 doses per day this way. At Yale New Haven Health, the system's hospitals also keep a list of those already signed up, but who are flexible with appointment timing, so that if extra doses remain at any point or there is a no-show, one of those employees is notified and vaccinated, spokeswoman Dana Moraine said in an email. To date, she said, 14,500 Yale healthcare providers have been immunized. The Food and Drug Administration's formal policy remains to discard vaccine left over in vials, the agency said, with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention determining who should receive the vaccine. The CDC did not respond to a request for comment. Neither Pfizer nor Moderna has a policy on unused vaccine. But Alex Azar, Secretary of Health and Human Services, urged officials Wednesday not to be hamstrung by federal priorities that call for health workers and residents and employees of elder care facilities to be first in line. It's more important to get people vaccinated than to perfectly march through each prioritized group, Azar said at a briefing on the vaccination effort. In McMillan's case, the pharmacist was following policy set by the District of Columbia, according to Felice Andrade, a spokesman for Giant Foods. Some vaccine has been administered outside the bounds of intended policy. On Saturday, word got out that a healthcare clinic in Austin was distributing vaccine, and some people scrambled to get in line, according to the Austin American-Statesman. One was Betsy Christian, who, according to the article posted on Facebook, "Okay, judge me. Daughter, spouse, and I got the vaccine today. We have no underlying conditions, aren't elderly, and aren't frontline workers." She said the father of her daughter's roommate had told them that the extra vaccines would go bad if not used today. "We felt bad taking someone's place, but the vaccines would have gone to waste. Are we rationalizing?" she added, according to the article. Those posts are no longer public, and Christian and her husband did not return telephone calls from the post. Heidi Shaliv, a spokeswoman for Austin Regional Clinic, told the American Statesman that once word got out, there were so many people standing in line that we wanted to get everybody through, and we wanted to use every vial of vaccine that we had. We wanted to make sure that none went to waste. We did learn that a sign-up process in the future is something that we'll do. McMillan, who memorialized his vaccination on TikTok, said, "Maybe if there was more time, I would have said, isn't there someone who needs this more than me?" But he said he had escaped his upbringing in a fundamentalist, anti-government, anti-vaccination community that later was the subject of a documentary, and he welcomed the opportunity to show that vaccinations are safe. The side effects were mild, he said. "Talk about a great way to start 2021, he wrote on TikTok. Carolyn Y. Johnson contributed to this report. And that is our coronavirus update for this Thursday, January 7th, 2021, from the Recording Library of West Texas. I'm Michael. Coming up next, we're going to bring you a Healthy Living magazine to take us up to 2 o'clock. Then we'll bring you the national news with USA Today. At 3 o'clock, of course, we'll have our local news broadcast, and we do have some interesting articles in our local papers today, and the things that happened at the Capitol yesterday do not escape the local newspaper's attention. Here is what's on the front page of today's Midland Reporter Telegram. Chaos at the Capitol. Jenny Cudd said, "We are charging the Capitol." Former Midland mayoral candidate among protesters at U.S. Capitol. Business. Pioneer CEO still sees slow U.S. oil output recovery. Business. Midland's sales tax collections continue downward spiral. From the Odessa American, most of the front page is an Associated Press article about yesterday's events at the Capitol. The one local story on the front page of the OA today is that story that I read partially at the beginning of our broadcast today, and that's about Sunflower Pharmacy offering the COVID vaccine. Here are a few other articles that are in the inside pages of today's Odessa American. Time change for council meetings pending. Man charged with kicking Odessa Police Department officer in thigh. And Odessa January sales tax dips. Those articles and more coming up in our local newspaper broadcast at 3 o'clock this afternoon. At 6 o'clock, more news with the Wall Street Journal. And at 7 o'clock, we have our locally produced Texas Monthly Archives program that is resuming production after a break from the holidays. Today, we will read about a Texas Ranger in the late 1970s who, on a drug raid, was shot and killed. But there was much circumstantial evidence regarding whether or not the person they accused of killing the agent had actually done that. So that is an interesting article. It runs over an hour, so part two will happen next week. But the August 1978 article, Death of a Ranger, by writer Larry Cartwright, will be tonight at 7 o'clock, and then, of course, at the regular weekend times that it runs as well. Thank you, as always, for joining us today. We'll be back at 1 o'clock tomorrow afternoon for a Friday. And in the meantime, be well and stay safe, and have a great day.
Now, here's your forecast for the Midland-Odessa area. It's 52 and clear. Tonight, clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then, tomorrow, clear with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low in the mid-30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas.
This program is made available to the IAAIS Program Share and was recorded at the Audio Reading Service of the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana, for people with print impairments.
Welcome. This is Healthy Life, and I'm your reader, Tony Ray, with the Audio Reading Service at the Ellen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Today I'll be reading from Health Magazine, and I'll begin with a story called Finding Your Why. A growing body of research is revealing that having a purpose is crucial for not only our emotional well-being, but our health too. A 2019 study in the Journal of JAMA Current Open, for example, found that participants who did not report a strong life purpose were twice as likely to die during the study period as those who did. Other research has linked a sense of purpose to better sleep and stronger immune function. The number of physical health indicators that are associated with the presence of purpose is really quite astounding, says Kendall Cotton Bronk, Ph.D., a professor of psychology at Claremont Graduate University in California. Reassuringly, Hill's research has found that purpose can come in all shapes and sizes and still bestow benefits. Yours doesn't have to be solving global warming, though if it is, you go. It can be growing vegetables in a community garden, being a good friend or supportive partner, or following your own spiritual path. What really matters, says Hill, is that you feel that you are doing what you do are doing is meaningful and important. Researchers are still exploring the reasons purpose seems to be so beneficial. For starters, those guided by purpose might have healthier lifestyles. There's no doubt that a good reason to stay fit, say, keeping up with a pack of foster dogs, can be a powerful motivator. Hill and his colleagues have found that people with a sense of meaning are less physically reactive to day-to-day stressors. Other research has shown that their stress hormone levels don't spike as much, and they are less likely to report physical symptoms like headache and fatigue. Purpose is also a powerful source of emotional resilience, says Hill. Your purpose is like a lighthouse. It guides you through difficult times so you can keep going forward. Indeed, research done at Cornell University found that study participants with a sense of purpose were more likely to perceive a steep hill as easier to climb. Some people have a clear idea of their idea of what the purpose is from the get to go, says Karen Rockin, a life purpose coach and host of the Purpose Girl podcast. I have a friend who always knew she wanted to practice medicine. There is a picture of her at 7 years old with a stethoscope around her neck. For many of us, however, our wish is more elusive. Bronx research has found that the most potent feelings of purpose have a connection to something outside the self. That could be a religious faith or an effort to build a rural library. But the purpose is rooted in a desire to make a difference, to contribute in some way to the broader world. In fact, people often find their reasons where their passions and skills overlap with some need that exists out there in the world. Discovering that sweet spot can take lots of wandering, detours, and mess-ups. It's as much about action as insight. Putting one foot in front of the other, trying things to see what lights you up, sometimes reversing course. That means volunteering for a new cause or chatting with a stranger. Remind yourself every step is a good step. There are twists and turns. Sometimes you listen to a voice within and face the fear. Sometimes you just leave. Here's the wayfinding. Imagine the future. Close your eyes and visualize your 80th birthday party. Listen for the clink of glasses. Picture the cake and candles and the faces of your loved ones. Now contemplate what you want to express to those gathered around you. What do you want to say about how you lived? Let the answers guide you. So write it out. Researchers say expressive writing is one of the most effective ways to get in touch with what makes your life meaningful. But sitting down with a blank sheet of paper to tackle a whopper like, what do I want to accomplish with my life, can be downright daunting. Approach the idea in less overwhelming language. Try responding to these following prompts. What does an ideal world look like to me? How would it be different than our current world? What first steps could I take to help bring about that change? Whom do I admire most? Why? What might their example show me about my life? What are the moments in my life in which I felt most alive, engaged, and joyful? What do those moments have in common? And how can I fill my life with more of that? Search for the quiet. Purpose requires having enough self-knowledge that you are in touch with your own talents and values. The daily cacophony, buzz, ping, that's your phone, can keep us so focused on the world around us we don't turn inward enough. One remedy, carving out some space to be alone. Finding times of quiet, such as meditation, gives you a chance to tune out the forces outside yourself, social media, or the expectations of others that may be drowning out your inner sense of direction. It can be as simple as going for a walk, strolling through nature near your home. I walk confidently towards my fear and embrace it until it becomes my strength, says Gassius, who shared herself with other women and saw how the affirmations moved them. I thought, this is what I need to do. I want to use my abilities to empower women. The epiphany that was in the first series of breadcrumbs, she says, realizations that were somehow guiding her toward a more meaningful life, has helped to found I See You Wellness in Brooklyn, a healing space where she runs self-experiences for women of color and other underserved communities. Walk your walk. One way to feel more purpose in your life is to consider how even your mundane day-to-day activities may be contributing to your bigger why. You can find meaning in the endless dishes and emails by connecting them to what you really care about, what you are here to do, says Leah Weiss, PhD. When you wade through a mountain of laundry, remind yourself that it is a necessary part of your mission to raise amazing kids. Frazzled by a big deadline, think about how what you are creating will eventually help other people. We are often on autopilot, mindless, crunching through the to-do list. Start building moments of contemplation into your routine. As you drink up your coffee, take time to reflect on what it is most important to you. What is your why? There's real power in just asking the question, says Bronk. While you ponder the answer, you may become more certain that you're on the right path or feel inspired to go in a completely new direction. The more I discover who I am, the more my purpose expands. It's so freeing. Keep it light. Rather than fixating on IDing your purpose, try to consider the notion with curiosity. Stimulate your creativity with questions like, "What might life have in store for me?" That open attitude worked. I became a big believer in playing more. Just dance, paint, follow your intuition to check out a new town or sign up for a new class. Be open to the unexpected. You never know what you will discover about yourself, what doors might open. And the conversation about callings. A series of health challenges led by Sahara Rose to her current mission, teaching a mostly millennial audience about the ancient Indian healing tradition of Ayurveda as a form of self-care. Growing up, I was very overweight. I had terrible asthma, Rose says, host of the Highest Self podcast. After college, she enrolled to become a certified health coach, but her own health continued to deteriorate, and that's when she began reading about Ayurveda, and eventually decided to move to India to study the philosophy. Ayurveda helped me to heal by bringing my body and mind back into balance. Her new book, Discover Your Dharma, out January 5th, is all about finding your higher calling. And here, Rose shares a few words of wisdom. What has Ayurveda taught you about purpose? It teaches that nature doesn't mess up. You are not here by accident. Your unique purpose, or dharma, is the string that pieces together many of the important moments in your life. Take time to reflect on what keeps coming up for you. If you have always loved making art, for instance, your purpose could be bringing more beauty to the world. How about the times when you feel like you've derailed? I believe we learn lessons that mostly help us grow, evolve, and expand. Think of them as your life's unique curriculum. I suggest journaling about them. What did my painful divorce teach me? Did I learn independence? How to trust my gut? How can I make use of the hard-earned knowledge to make the world a better place? How do you know if you are on the right path? When we are tapped into our true selves, we will experience synchronicities. The road becomes easier. Things start to click into place. For instance, you might meet someone who will be influential to you at just the right time. When you are living your purpose, you will experience a feeling of passion, like you are opening your arms to something greater. Follow those feelings. They are your compass. You must also find and allow room to grow. It is natural for the purpose to change as you do, says Sarah Bali Haas, MD, an executive and resilience coach. Haas should know. During her training to become a physician, she took a detour to follow her dream to becoming a professional flamenco dancer. A good time to check in with yourself is during big transitions. A job loss, a breakup, an empty nest. Not sure where to start? Think back to your childhood passion. What were you obsessed with as a kid before the grown-ups got to you and started telling you what you should do? Building things, caring for animals. Ask yourself, is there a way to get more of those passions in your life now? Stay strong to keep the muscular skeletal system in top form. Orthopedics say to do these six things. Bolster your frame. Every human body is held up by some 206 bones, but women have to be a little more mindful of theirs. We tend to have lower bone density than men in general. And during menopause, we experience a drop in bone density thanks to waning estrogen, which is the key contributor to bone cell production. One of the best ways to shore up your skeleton is to choose a diet that includes plenty of calcium, vitamin D, two essential nutrients to strengthening bone tissue. Canned salmon is an excellent source of both. The other crucial move, engaging in weight-bearing exercise, like walking, running, or strength training, a few times a week. These workouts exert a force on your bones that stimulate them to produce new cells. It's also important to get a bone density test at some point to check for weaknesses. Doctors typically suggest women wait until the age of 65, but you may want to get a scan earlier if you've already had more than one fracture, or if you have a condition like inflammatory bowel disease, which can prevent nutrients from reaching your bones. Listen to cues. Working out is vital for so many aspects of your health. Just keep in mind, it's also a major culprit of muscular skeletal damage. Injuries from physical activity either come from doing too much too soon or not having the correct form. They're one of the top reasons people under 50 need orthopedic surgery. To avoid sitting on the sidelines, pay attention to your body's physical signals. Don't brush off tenderness or push through discomfort. Minor aches should be resolved within 2 weeks, but if they don't, or you're feeling numbness, tingling, or you're having trouble walking, bring up your pain or tightness with a trainer or orthopedist. It's also important to mix up your workouts. If you're a runner, for example, try incorporating a few days of yoga or swimming into your weekly regimen. Getting a weekly form of exercise will help you target different muscles and ligaments and prevent over-injury. When you have a slight sprain or you think you pulled a muscle, there's a good chance you'll head to the freezer for a bag of peas. For many years, the standard advice for minor injuries has been rice, rest, ice, compression, elevation. But it turns out ice isn't always beneficial and can sometimes be harmful. While ice can ease pain within the first 24 to 48 hours, it may delay healing. It constricts blood vessels, which slows down inflammatory response. Swelling is actually part of the recovery process. As the body increases blood flow and sends white blood cells and fluid to the damaged area in an attempt to repair it. Slipping on a compression sock or sleeve can help. It'll squeeze any built-up fluid out of the area. And most docs recommend engaging in gentle movement to prevent your tissue from stiffening up. Another common mistake is icing sore legs or arms after an intense sweat session. Soreness means your body is repairing the micro tears in the muscles and building them back stronger. A foam roller can help by loosening up tight tissue and improving blood flow to the area. Don't have a foam roller? Try rolling a lacrosse or tennis ball over your sore spots. If muscular skeletal pain crops up somewhere in your body and you end up in a doctor's office, you may be given a choice between drugs, surgery, and physical therapy. Many orthopedists recommend the latter first. Physical therapy, PT, helps strengthen the area that's causing your discomfort and correct any imbalances that maybe contribute to the problem. The therapy may even build up resilience. It could re-educate your central nervous system to be less sensitive to pain. In some cases, medication may be necessary, but combining it with PT might boost healing further. Korean researchers found that when people with a frozen shoulder took anti-inflammatory drugs or received steroid injections, both remedies worked better when the study participants were also doing PT. Consider your pelvic floor. Back pain is one of the most common musculoskeletal issues and also one of the most frustrating. There are a variety of possibilities, including herniated disc, compressed nerves, poor posture, even weak glutes. But it's worth considering yet another potential source that's often overlooked, an imbalance in the pelvic floor, the group of muscles and connective tissue that stretch from your pubic bone to your tailbone. When the pelvic floor muscles become too tight or weakened, they end up putting pressure on the back. This discomfort often comes with other symptoms such as painful sex, difficult bowel movements, and urinary incontinence. Women who have been pregnant or who have endometriosis or uterine cysts are often prone to pelvic floor issues. Lifting heavy weights can also put you at risk. The good news for your aching back, pelvic floor specialists can help you rehab the problematic muscles. Most women are able to find relief with a combo of physical therapy and biofeedback therapy. Last, sit right. Data from the CDC found that 1 in 4 American adults is seated for 8+ hours a day. During the pandemic, many of us are spending even more time sitting at home. That could explain a lot about how your body feels. Sitting in one position or with poor posture tightens up many of your muscles, ligaments, and joints, which often leads to soreness and pain. Here's how to manage all those hours on your bottom a little better. First, don't attempt 90-90-90 posture with your knees, hips, and elbows all bent at 90 degrees. There's actually no good evidence that what position is best, and it could result in joint stiffness. Instead, she suggests leaning back a little in your chair so your hips are bent at an angle slightly greater than 90 degrees. Also, move your feet away from your body a bit so your knees are bent at a greater angle too. And if you're not working at a desk, choose a stable seat that allows you to sit as upright as possible. A kitchen chair, for example, is better than the couch. And if the seat feels uncomfortable for your tush, invest in a gel cushion, which can help prevent soreness and the loss of blood flow caused by some hard surfaces. Then, every 20 to 30 minutes, get up. The idea is to alternate between sitting and standing. When you're on 2 feet, take a short walk or try hip, neck, and shoulder rolls and enjoy the stretch. As for new joints, have a friend who needs an artificial knee or a colleague who just had hip surgery. If you feel like younger people are getting joint replacements these days, you're not wrong. Patients as young as 45 are undergoing these operations. Doctors say in the next decade, knee replacements are predicted to rise 189% and hip replacements 171%. More people want to stay fit as they age, and hip and knee replacement and shoulders are one of the things they are doing. We also have medical innovation to thank. 20 years ago, a knee replacement might have lasted 15 years, but now it can last 25 to 30 years. Today's artificial joints simply work better, allowing people to do more with their hardware. One of the risks of early replacement, of course, is needing a revision surgery later in life. So before you go under the knife, ask your doc about preventatives that can help preserve your own joints. Well, that's all the time we have for today. This has been Tony Ray with Healthy Life. I hope you've enjoyed today's reading from the audio reading service at the Allen County Public Library in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Next on Recording Library of West Texas Radio, USA Today, followed by the Midland Reporter Telegram and Odessa American at 3.
Now here's your forecast for the Midland, Odessa area. It's 52 and clear. Tonight clear with a low in the upper 30s. Then tomorrow clear with a high in the low 50s. Tomorrow night partly cloudy with a low in the mid 30s. From the Recording Library of West Texas 24-Hour Weather Center, I'm Maria Lopez.
This is the Recording Library of West Texas. It's 2 p.m.
Hello, this is Melanie, and I'm reading the articles from today.